Mickey Hart here. You're listening to GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome along to the GAA sponsored by AIB. I'm Conan Doherty, and we're not even 2 weeks out from the Football Championship, and Woolley has taken a back seat, put the feet up, and they've reeled on the B team already. It's myself and Conor Heenan here. Conor, how are things?
Not too bad, Conan.
Thankfully Woolley has left us a lovely interview with Andy Moore, and he was talking to him during the week. It's very good. He's still very raw from the final, I'm sure you,
as we all
you
are.
Know, yeah. But that's coming up on the show. We also have Steve McDonald coming up talking about the Downing Championship final. He's involved there with St Mary's Burn, so it's going to be a cracker. Bear with us. But first things first, Saturday, 30th of September, we're going to have a special Congress. Now, the CPA have come out and they said, "We will be targeting Congress 2018 to be the Congress that will change the landscape for the club players." Now, they reckon that they've got an assurance from the GAA management that there will be the concerns of club players addressed at this special Congress coming up on Saturday. They put out a statement on the website, says they have committed to producing a national masters fixture plan by the end of October 2017 for the 2018 season. So they're saying that this is all going to be done within the next month. I believe that when I see it.
Yeah.
They have given us a verbal assurance that the repeated CPA requests focusing on the needs of club players will be reflected in this plan, delivering more exclusive club weekends and by adding certainty to the calendar. Now, you know, this is sort of exciting times, you might say, but you also get the feeling that it might get fobbed off on Saturday.
We'll have to wait and see what comes of it, Conan. But I think a lot of credit is due to the CPA for the way they've kind of gone about, like, say, representing the voice of the club player. Like, for years, like, as a club player myself, you'd hear tales of kind of, oh, the club players are badly treated and this, that, and the other. You'd hear horror stories. But until this year, I don't think there's actually been a definitive voice for, you know, for the club player and what they've kind of been through. So, like, in the last couple of months alone, the CPA have released a couple of surveys. And think about these CPA surveys, they literally take a minute. They're really clear, concise. They get the message across really well. So as a result of a couple of them that they've taken in the last couple of months, they basically said, I have it here in front of me, actually. They asked, like, as a club player, are you willing to wait until 2020 for change? Obviously, 92% said no.
Who said yes?
Yeah. Do you think the club fixture should be on the agenda at the Congress? 98% said yes. There's like over 3,000 people for all these responses. Do you believe the CPA should escalate its response? That was, again, 95% said yes. And then the last one was, have you ever considered walking away from the game because a lack of a definitive fixture calendar? Now, that was a bit, I think that was around 60%. But, like, it's, with results like that, I mean, like, you know, they're staring you in the face. The GAA couldn't ignore figures like that, you know. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what comes out of it. I mean, the Congress itself is primarily about restructuring the hurling championship, but, you know, they've committed to a Masters fixtures plan. Now, I don't think that's going to be out until mid-November, but, you know, like, the CPA are applying pressure, so fingers crossed they'll come up with something that'll suit all parties.
Yeah, no, listen, I get that there's a need to change things. I get that the season should not be, what is it now, 16 months long if you're a county player and you're starting in December with those pre-season competitions. Yeah. There's an fake cup in Ulster before the McKenna Cup, before the league. And then if you win your club, you're going into March 6th. You're basically going 15, 16 months. There's, I get that all that needs addressed. I get that some club players are fobbed off and all, but is that really fairly reflected what's happening in the country with these surveys? It's so easy just to click yes, I want change. Like, how many club players really are really affected by this? Like, I'm from Derry, so yeah, we're out every year by June, July. Club season runs off perfectly. We had a lovely, like, we had a lovely back-to-back league campaign there. Then it finished before the championship even started. We had 2 weeks in between, and then every single championship game you had 2 weeks. That was fine. Like, and is that the same? Like, it's interesting that you said you hear horror stories of club player. Like, have you not had those yourself, either? Because I haven't.
Well, kind of, yeah.
We don't really, like, there's a lot of concern for club players and stuff, but we don't really, like, it's not like, we do care, but we're not so worked up about it that it's like, I'm going to walk away. That question there, like, have you considered walking away? People, GAA players will never walk away.
I know.
Whether you like it or not, you're tied to your club and you're going to, like, as much as you don't like it, you're going to train as much as you have to.
I know, I thought that result was a bit skewed as well, but the thing for me, like, it's nearly understandable for me if, like, say, in Mayo, and after what happened this year, so Mayo barely had a break. I mean, we championship game week on week, so, like, club championship isn't going to go ahead while the county are in action.
Yeah.
But we're going into club championship this weekend. Bear in mind now that we have to have it finished by the end of October, because then it runs into Connacht, etc. So we've already been presented with the fixtures plan for the next 4 weeks. If let's say my club were to, and then I play for an intermediate club, if we were to get through to the quarterfinals, if we were to draw the quarterfinals, the replays on Wednesday, if we were to, you know, potentially get through to the semifinals and draw that, the replays on Wednesday again. So you're talking about, you could, let's say a team drew a quarterfinal and a semifinal and got to the final. They're playing every 3-4 days, packing basically nearly the entirety of the championship campaign into, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. So I think that's at the lesser end of the scale. And I think Mayo, to be fair to them, actually are pretty good at running after a championship. But what gets me is the stories of counties that go out of the championship really early, and then you still hear them, you know, packing championships into, you know, periods like that. And there, I remember a couple of, like, the horror stories I'm referring to. I remember when Donegal won the All-Ireland a few years ago, and they basically put their championship
That was crazy.
And then Carl Lacy is playing something like 6 games in 4 weeks, ends up crocked because of it. So I agree with you. I think that particularly it's so easy to tick a box, and like, to be fair to the CPA, the questions nearly lent themselves to you ticking that box as well.
Yeah.
But that last question about walking away, well, whether it came to the crunch, whether they actually walk away, I'm not sure. But there's obviously a problem that the CPA, you know, see fit to address. I don't know, like, me and you have stories of club championships running fairly smoothly, but I'm pretty sure there's, on the other end, there's equally the same amount of stories of them not in other counties.
Yeah, and I get that it's annoying, and there's a good point, like, well, no wonder people would say join a soccer team, because they know they're going to play on a Saturday morning all the time, and they get more sort of regularity out of it. But, like, even those people who are being slightly screwed over by this, like, it might happen in Mayo or an other county who gets to the final because they're so crammed and they don't want to play the club season during the county season. But I remember we played a promotion playoff in November 27th or something like that, and you didn't even think anything of it. Like, you know, it was annoying that the season went on long, but there was never a sense that the GAA are screwing us over, like, we need to do something about it. There was never anything like that, and I get that that shouldn't happen, but then you also have, like, people playing Ulster finals in December and stuff. Like, you know, that's sort of the norm, and it shouldn't be the norm, but I don't know if there's this real outrage, like, at ground level in all these clubs when lads are talking to each other than there is presented in these surveys.
Well, I would say that there obviously is because of the results of these surveys. As I said, it's easy to take yes, but at the same time, people aren't going to blatantly lie either. Do you know what I mean? And you're talking about kind of club games in December and stuff like that, which is, like, I think it's great sometimes for like, as a kind of GAA fan, when you get to, like, your own season is over, but, like, on a Sunday evening or a Sunday afternoon, you get to sit back and watch a great club game from a provincial championship. But that's not taken into account. It's not taken into account the club guy who, you know, might be involved with County or might be involved with, you know, Sigerson Fitzgibbon.
Yep.
And he started training for that, you know, before Christmas, and yet he's still playing into December. His campaign is going to continue on to the next year and doesn't get a break. Whereas it's like he probably spent 2 months during the summer barely playing any games whatsoever, when, you know, that should be a great time for the ideal time for playing football and hurling, you know.
Okay, something needs to be done.
Yeah,
you're right. All right, I want to move it on, actually, because there's more sort of news developing throughout the week. Pat Gilroy is in the running to be Dublin hurling manager. Pat Gilroy, who won the senior football championship with Dublin back in 2011, obviously got great sort of credentials as a football manager, great reputation as a football manager. Now he's taking over the hurling team, allegedly. Is that a good thing for Dublin?
Yeah, I mean, he has, like, he's from Vincent's, which would be a strong dual club, and he has a hurling background as well. Gilroy has a hurling background. I suppose the thing that, like, I've been reading a few things that have been coming out about Pat Gilroy this week, and players that would have played under him, kind of the strengths that they kind of testify about would be his his ability to facilitate and his improvement of the mentality and attitude in the Dublin footballers. I think that was the main thing he did. It was like famously he talked about start Learwigs in, I think it was 2009. Within 2 years, Dublin are winning an All-Ireland. And although he hasn't been involved the last few years, he laid the foundations for the type of player that came through and kind of the attitude and stuff that they've been working off. But I know it all depends then on that on who he gets in around him. It's been mooted that Anthony Cunningham might come in. Don't know whether he's going to be seen as damaged goods to an extent, given that the kind of Galway players pushed him out a couple of years ago. And there's also been kind of rumblings in Dublin hurling that like if there was any Galway man to be involved, should it be Matty Kenny, who won the All-Ireland club with Coolas. So the only thing about Gilroy being involved is that should things go wrong down the line, that accusation can always be thrown at him, is that like, oh well, what do you expect when you put a football manager in charge of a hurling team? So
that's it. And I get, I understand that he knows how to organise a team, and it's not that you have to have the same sort of athleticism, you have to have the same sort of idea, like you have the same positions essentially, like, so it's not that different, and he can be the one who, as you said, facilitate this. And I agree that success breeds success, but that's exactly my point. When shit hits the fan, it's going to be like, what would you know? What would you know? But like, it's sort of almost, are you coming in already without that footing that people respect this hurling man that's in front of them? Whereas he's, like you said, he's a hurling man, but he's got this reputation as a football manager, and it's going to be so easy just to dismiss that then if things go wrong. The Anthony Cunningham thing is interesting though, especially considering he's been a football manager for the last
of course, yeah.
But do you think that immediately, not... I know he said damaged goods, but do you think that sort of writes him off for any other job because the Galway boys had enough? Like, he did well at Galway.
No, not necessarily. And damaged goods was just kind of like how he might be portrayed because of the manner.
You said damaged goods.
I know he said it. At the same time, Anthony Cunningham would just come back at me and say, well, listen, he got that Galway team to two All-Ireland finals.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same group, and he could maybe claim responsibility for bringing them to a level that eventually, you know, led to them kind of winning the All-Ireland. It's hard to know whether it's going to affect his reputation and kind of taking on another hurling county. And although he's potentially getting involved, the other question is whether he would want to be involved in as a manager in another county. Like, I think we're probably going to talk about Kieran Kingston, but Kieran Kingston gave up on Cork because he simply just didn't have the time. You know, and he was saying like, you know, just walk a mile in the manager's shoes and you're going to see how tough it is. So I don't know how much Anthony Cunningham's reputation has been kind of affected by his Galway experience, but then again, should the Dublin thing go well, if he's going to be involved with Pat Gilroy, that could completely turn his reputation around again.
But it's funny, like, you look at someone like Pete McGrath, who was ousted from the Fermanagh job and not happy about it by all accounts, taking over Louth now. He's the new Louth manager, announced last night. And for me, you couldn't help, if you were a member of the wee county, you couldn't help but be excited by that, because no matter what happened with Fermanagh, he actually did a good job with Fermanagh originally, got them to the quarterfinal, a great game with Dublin, and they obviously went down, but it was a good battle and they got pats in the back or whatever. But like, you know, he's won two All-Irelands as a manager, he's won four Hogan Cups as a manager, he's won All-Ireland minor titles, like he's won Ulster under 21 titles, like he wins trophies wherever he's been. So no matter what happened in Fermanagh, I don't think that should affect him going into the live job.
No, I don't think so. And I think with Pete McGrath, I think he's going to, what he does, no matter where he goes, is kind of bring a feel good, you know, atmosphere to the place. He definitely did that for Fermanagh, and imagine he'd do that with Louth as well. I take it he didn't have to interview for the job, given that he had reservations about doing that for Donegal. But I suppose, like, Pete McGrath has such a reputation built up over such a period of time that he's probably better able to withstand a couple of hits to that reputation, you know?
Yeah, that's fair enough. It's funny that you mentioned Kieran Kingston there, because Dermot O'Sullivan, The Rock, has come out and he's just clarified where he stands on the Cork management position, the vacant Cork management position. He said, "While it is a privilege to have my name linked to what I consider the most prestigious job in hurling by most media outlets, it is not my intention to put my name forward at this time. Good luck to the new man. Make Cork great again." So The Rock is out. But he's gone out with a lovely, sentiment.
Would have been great to see him on the sideline, just you know, for the possibility of loan of that repeat with you know, the kind of bargain match he had with Dan Shanahan there in the semi-final. He's not the only one that's gone. Actually, there's a couple more of the management team Kingston's management team that have left, and I think the only one remaining is John Myler. He'd be David Myler's dad, and I think he's odds on to get the job. But I think it's whoever kind of comes in for Cork, I think it's really important, because they had such a good year last year. You know, Cork were back. You know, when Cork, like, it's kind of a cliche, like, but with Cork are involved in the championship, it just brings something different. It's better. Like, dare I say, they bring it like an arrogance kind of.
Yeah. Oh, they won't fear Kilkenny.
No, that's it. You know, with so much momentum built up over the last year, with such a group of young players kind of coming through, it's vital that whoever does kind of come in kind of carries that momentum on, like, you know. And just even when I was saying that Myler was kind of odds on, there's a few, like the likes of Donal Cusick, you know, he's been involved with Clare, and Sean O'Gahalpin, they're kind of involved with club teams as well, and they've been kind of, they're longer odds, but it'd be interesting to see that, like, would they be interested in kind of coming back in as part of the setup too.
Alright, we'll leave that there, because I want to talk about the ladies final happening Sunday. What a match. Now, I don't want to poke more fun at me with people losing, but I mean, my God, it's funny, like, you know, obviously everyone was talking about the attendance figures, over 46,000, a record, and, you know, brilliant to see. But then naturally, when something starts doing well, cynics come out and start getting at it, and like the claim then was that there were so many free tickets handed out and there were a lot of primary school children there. My argument would be, why does it matter? There's over 46,000 people. It doesn't matter how they're there. There's going to be over 50,000 next year, so it's only a good thing no matter how they're there. And then the TV figures just come out and they've backed it all up. I mean, like, I think TG Cahir broke a record of their own. It was like 303,000 people on average.
Yeah.
Almost 304,000 people on average tuned into the live broadcast of that game. And it was a brilliant game. And it's something that, it actually, almost, not that it changed my attitude, but I would have been guilty in the past of, you know, you sort of think that you do enough in the media. Now, I'm not saying, like, you know, we've got this obligation. Maybe we do have some sort of obligation, but I would always sort of made the case that it's supply and demand. When there's a big demand, and we'll supply it, like, we'll match that demand. And it was almost comfortable behind that sort of, look, we do a lot of Serena Williams stuff, we do more Serena Williams than Andy Murray, say, for example, or our MMA coverage is, you know, 50-50. Like, if it's a big sort of appetite there for it, we will do it. But then you look at something like that, and just a little push that people like Lidl are giving it, and people like TG Cahir are giving it, and like, the demand is coming because there's a supply there, if you get me. It's working in the other direction. Like, you know, these people are helping push us onto a new level, and people are getting interested. And then suddenly you're watching that game, and people know the names now of the players, and they know the characters, and people are even starting to, like, you know, they're starting to slag Cora Staunton, oh, she's not passing enough, or they're starting to, like, really critique the game properly now. And it's because we're elevating it a little bit, and it's almost like you have this responsibility to help it get there, because that game was brilliant and more people deserve to watch it and see those players.
Yeah, absolutely. And the likes of Lidl and TG Cahir have been getting behind it, because the product has been really good as well. I mean, one of the best games I've seen in the last couple of years was Mayo Dublin last year, actually, and it was settled with a ridiculous free. It was in Breffni Park. Atmosphere was brilliant as well. It was settled with a free, I think, at the last minute. I don't think it was Noel Healy. She got man the match the last day, but no, unbelievable game. What took me the last game was the speed of the game. You know, biased obviously, but like I kind of like Mayo played for the guts of 20 minutes with 13 players on such a massive pitch with, you know, such a frenetic pace, and I think it kind of caught up in them in the end. I don't think the scoreline really reflected kind of fairly on Mayo at the end. But yeah, what a game. And like obviously the two counties involved, There was definitely a conscious effort in Mayo after losing the men's final to, you know, really get behind the ladies. And it was a message that, to be fair to them, Stephen Rochford and Killian O'Connor really kind of re-emphasised, both at the banquet on the Sunday night and then at the homecoming on the Monday. And they did, like, you know, the crowd was amazing. And then, but like, it's great to see that it wasn't just because of that. Like, there was 400,000 people watching the game at one stage. I know there was an average of 300,000. And, you know, if they can keep this up, it's only going to grow and grow, and that's a great thing.
And there's a great great quote from Sinead Finnegan after the game. She said, "It's like being broken up with 3 years in a row in September. You've been dumped and you're very sad. Like, that's like what a like, it really does sort of put it on the like, and male people will probably
I can't like, speak for being broken up or, you know, dumped three times in their own September, but I can speak for losing finals repeatedly, and that's just as a fan, you know, as a fan, like, we're shook up altogether. Can you imagine what it's going to be like if your entire lives, your life revolves around it? So you had to be, while you know, obviously down about kind of Mayo losing, there had to be an element of kind of being happy for, you know, Dublin, a Dublin team that lost three in a row, and just to get to the top.
Yeah, and like, well, here's one that I want to put to you. Like, I was talking to Willie about this during the week, and like, you know, this podcast has been very fair on Mayo. We'd actually consider ourselves fans of Mayo, but like, you look at some of the stats here, Connor. Like,
go on.
9 finals they've lost in the senior men's championship since 1951. 3 final losses in the last 16 years of the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
No, I know they've won a pile of ladies' championships at the turn of the century, so that's probably a bad enough again.
Yeah, yeah.
14 losses in the minor championship.
Won a couple then too.
They won 2013. But like, you know, like, these are stacking up. Like, I know they won the under 21 in 2016, but even then they've lost more than they've won. 7 club losses, 2 wins in finals, senior club losses. Mm-hmm. Even you've lost a junior club All-Ireland.
That's right,
like,
yeah.
Is there... is this a coincidence that these teams are losing? Like, I know, like, obviously you say now, like, Dublin are the best team probably of all time, and you're losing to them, that's fine, and there's a lot of numbers stacking up already.
You're trying to say it's a mentality thing, is that it?
This is the question that I'm putting to you. Is it a mentality thing?
No, I genuinely don't think so. Like, just to address the kind of the senior team for a start, I think it might have been kind of until the present team came along. So even though we got beaten in All-Ireland finals by teams that were far better than us, far superior, you know, Kerry 2006, 2004, yeah, way better. But at the same time, I would imagine that there was probably a fear about, you know, from Mayo of kind of getting over the line. Whereas the last few years, absolutely not with the senior team. I mean, they just happened to have been on the end of 3 1-point defeats to the best team ever, or one of the best teams ever, and I know that might be hiding away from it a little bit, but that's,
I don't think it is.
That's a fact. as regards the rest, I can only speak for, like, as I said, we lost the club final. I don't think it was a mentality thing at all. I can't speak for the rest of them. I can understand why it would be seen as a mentality thing, because we lose so many finals, but no, I'm going to stick my neck out and say no, it's just a coincidence.
No, because I know plenty of clubs who, like, you know, whole way through underage and senior, like, you know, they lose finals, and it's almost like, again, it's not, they probably wouldn't think it's a mentality thing, but it might be subconscious in there that, yeah, when they get to that big stage, they probably don't visualise themselves getting over the line.
Owlert, wasn't it? Owlert and, we're called Owlert the Battlers, yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, honestly, like, you look, now this is a ridiculous example, but Conor McGregor is always talking about the law of attraction and visualising yourself in that moment that you want to be in. Like, is, if you keep losing finals, if you continuously don't get over the line, is that harder
to do? Does it have a denigrating? I would say absolutely. Yeah, well, especially if you're involved in a team like the current Mayo senior team that have lost repeatedly. I would imagine that although they, like, as best as they can protect themselves against it, there'd be a tiny little seed of doubt that might enter their minds because of what they've been through before, and that tiny little seed might be, you know, the small difference, that might be the you know, a point in the difference between themselves and Dublin. But no, to go back to your overall thing, as I said, it just looks terrible. I mean, our record is absolutely atrocious, but I would say that I don't think it's a mentality thing. I could be wrong.
I want to clarify that I don't either. I just thought it. Have a bit of fun. Well, we'll leave that there because we've got a nice interview with Andy Moran coming up. He was speaking at the PwC's office in Dublin, having picked up the PwC GPA Player of the Month Award for August. That's a mouthful, but he was speaking to Willie, and here it is.
Andy, congratulations on the award, for starters. I'm not sure if Player of the Month means very much to you now at this stage.
To be honest, it was tough coming up today. I suppose after the week, but listen, it's lovely to get an award, and Joe, you'll come up. We came up for the ladies' match on Sunday, so we just stayed around for 2 days, you know, so yeah, it was grand.
So it's like, Jesus, all this media stuff you have to do along with this award.
Lee got the award for July, I think. We left him at home, you know, so yeah. But no, it was fine. The guys actually were okay, you know.
Yeah, come here, because you have been quiet on the media all year, you know. It's been a policy with Stephen this year to keep you away from it. remember saying to Stephen, I kind of can understand that a little bit, because Aidan did something during the year and what he said was blown completely out of proportion. So, you know, I'm sure the players possibly behind this media ban that you've had this year.
Yeah, I don't think we had a ban. I think we just needed, like, I think we're a team with good personality in terms of, and we don't mind expressing our views at times. So sometimes it's good just to, you know, release the younger lads and let them off and get them used to it, you know. So I think that's kind of what happened more so than anything, you know.
Right, okay. So come here, what's the last week been like?
Tough week. We came home to homecoming on Monday. We did the gig on Sunday after the match. You know, they're usually very tough gigs, but the Mayo fans have just been unreal, to be honest with you. Like, more so than any other year. Definitely more so than any other year. And they've made it quite easy. We had a good night out Monday, and Sunday and Monday, and then I think a couple of the boys were out again for the week. But me being the older statesman, I had to go home, do you know?
Right, okay. Yeah. And come here, just even in the aftermath, I've lost two All-Ireland finals myself, under 21 in club. And I saw Sinead Finnegan, Dublin footballer, talking about her losing the three All-Irelands. And she says it's like being dumped every September, and you have to get over that, and you know, it's almost like a feeling that you're heartbroken for like, it's almost like for a few months for me.
Yeah, I watched a clip yesterday in online, just a clip, 2 minute clip, and I try to keep away from it as much as I can in terms of just in terms of the football side of it, watching it. I probably won't watch the game now till December, kind of. I mightn't even watch it, to be honest with you, until we do the analysis next year. And I just kind of keep away from it. It's a tricky little one. I have a little girl now at home, so it kind of takes your mind off it fairly quick. Coming back to work on Wednesday, I just kind of get on with it. At 25, I remember the feeling when we were younger, you couldn't get over it for weeks. You know, you just keep going until the club scene was over, and then you'd probably get into it again and be depressed again for another couple of weeks. But now it's a bit different now, Colin, if I'm being honest.
Is it in a weird way that this one is easier to get over, in that you all played well? You know, it's not looking back that you didn't show up on the day, but you did.
Yeah.
You were just perhaps beaten by a better team on the day.
Yeah, it's not like I don't think it's easier to get over. I think it's more of it's not like. I think before, when you used to lose finals, like in 2004 and 2006, John, people would actually be looking at it and saying, that's me done, I can't handle it again. But football is kind of the way it is now, that the county team is kind of like your club team, and you'll just go back in and you'll start training again, and you'll try to learn from it and you'll move on. And I think that's the way we are, more so than that. And is it easier to get over? Absolutely not. Like, I can tell you, losing by a point, three All-Ireland finals in a row to Dublin is very, very tough.
Yeah.
Do you
go back and analyse every little thing? Because, like, it's just such a fine margin that you go, if that hadn't happened or if that hadn't happened.
But the truth about it is, you start in January and everyone is back on the same level again, and we'll meet Dublin once in the league and meet them once in the championship at some stage, hopefully, do you know? So you can analyse it, but is there any point analysing it before you play them again? Probably not, you know. You're looking again now. Next year you're looking at Donegal, Tyrone, you know, all these boys coming up from Kildare, coming up from Galway, you know, all big league games, and you have to go again.
It's more like thinking, if one, like, because it was such small margins, if one thing had gone differently, we would have won. You can replay that stuff.
Yeah, and like the one thing, I've said it in here, though, like, I can see the free just before half time and thinking it's not a free. Like, I can still see that. But what I do is, I can just park it now at this point. I can just say, listen, it is what it is. Will I be driving to work on Monday morning and all of a sudden a chance will come into my head? I'm like, yeah, okay, and I'll try to just get it out of my head then as quick as I can again. That's just the way I deal with it now. Is that a lot different than the way I used to deal with it 100%?
Right, okay. Yeah. And, just talk to me about the aftermath after the final, because you're all distraught on the field, like Lee Keegan's in tears. You know, you go back into the dressing room, I'm sure a lot of the players really let the tears out when you go back in. And then, if it's anything like me having lost finals, you'll have a few pints and suddenly the sting will be taken out of it, and you might start enjoying yourselves and feel guilty about enjoying yourselves. It's a really weird dynamic.
Oh yeah, but that's the way it is. I think that's sort of human. We really got one night out for the whole year this year because of the run of games we went on. So as soon as the championship started, our championship was that mad.
Yeah.
We nearly had a game every week. So I think we had a couple of drinks after the Kerry game, the semi-final, and then this week now the boys would have went out, and it's still the same. It's still the same. Yeah. And an awful lot of boys probably won't reflect on the match I went Sunday and Monday. The lads probably went Sunday, all the single boys probably went Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe even Thursday.
Yeah.
Come back, play a club game. They'll have club championship this week. And then when you get knocked out with the club championship, I think that's when it really hits you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Because it's almost postponing the grief.
It
really,
is, yeah.
And
then they'll sit down and they'll watch it. And then all of a sudden, they kind of just, it'll be tough on them. But listen, they're really, honestly now, they're really good people in terms of the players and the thing. But Mio people are so obsessed with this team now at the minute that they're really good people as well. Do you know, the people around the Mio setup are actually really good guys. So it helps, Colm, I'm telling you. We've been there before, like in 2004 and 2006, and you come back. And really, like, you haven't performed. You're bit by probably one of the greatest Kerry teams of all time.
Yeah.
And they've hammered you. They've hammered you without Seamus Moynihan and Darragh O'Shea. And you can't really look people in the eye. Now, at least, you know, the boots are left on the field at the end of it. And, you know, we literally just go away and we just say, come on, we'll go again, you know?
Yeah. It's a real weird year you had this year, isn't it? In that you didn't kick into form until the Roscommon replay.
Yeah.
And, like, you'd even dropped out of the conversation for the All-Ireland. And then suddenly, just that spark. And then you're back playing great stuff against Kerry twice. Isn't it weird how that happened?
But you lose against Galway, and then all of a sudden you have huge pressure on you. Do you know? You have, like, massive pressure on you. Like, that Derry game, like, was, oh, man, it was horrible, do you know? So all of a sudden you have pressure. You go down and play Clare, you play quite well, you get the job done. Playing Cork, you're cruising, and then all of a sudden young Powder and all these fellas start coming into it, and do you know, all of a sudden you're in a dogfight.
You're in big trouble there.
You're in big trouble,
right?
Do you know? And then you go up and play Roscommon. It's such an emotional game for us, and it's such an emotional game for Roscommon. You have Liam and Kevin, and do you know, all of a sudden there's huge pressure on you. Once we left the pressure go,
right,
and we just ended up playing, we started playing the football we know we can play, do you know?
Yeah, and then, like, that, it was like that spark just ignited, and suddenly you're playing brilliant football.
Yeah.
And in contrast to last year, you had real form going into the final, you know, whereas last year you were hoping something might 100%, happen.
100%. Like, last year, like, we stumbled over Tyrone, we could be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I thought we played well, but we didn't.
And you won a tactical
Dower game, and then we played Tipperary, where we didn't play well for the whole second half. That game, we nearly could have gotten pipped, you know, at the end of it, you know. And I think Conor O'Shea came on and got the goal. So we'd no form going in. This year, we'd a bit of form, better team that we hadn't bet in a long time. Probably performed well against Dublin for long periods, and they probably played the best football they've played for a long time as well. And,
in the second half.
And all of a sudden, you know, they pip us by a point, and it's a free that does it for them. So it's you have to take your hats off to Dublin. We're very gracious in defeat. We acknowledge that Dublin are a good team, but are a very good team, will you stop? But you know, they've done three in a row, but it is what it is.
We were saying on the podcast, Cian Ward, that considering how little there is between yourselves and Dublin, and some of those lads have 5 All-Irelands and you've got none. Like, there's something just doesn't add up there. But
I suppose a lot of our fellas have done it for a lot of years. But it you have to take your chance when you get there. Do you know? And we enjoy the journey and we enjoy everything. But we want an All-Ireland. Let's call it spade a spade. And that, for that reason, I don't think there'll be any big news coming out of our camp anytime soon. Do you know?
Yeah. Okay. Come here. Talk to us about getting taken off, because this was a big story of the summer as well. Yourself and Colin Boyle. A lot of people thinking that you're playing well and you're getting taken off. Stephen Rochford told me that it's not predetermined at all. In certain situations, he thought both of you were slowing down. Like, I don't know, has the technology gone that far that he's getting live GPS kind of data of, you know, proof that you're slowing down? Or I'm not sure if that's how it works or how it's explained to you.
Like, I think my position, especially, is that I have an exceptionally good footballer coming in for me. Like, it's in, you were down with the Derry game, weren't you? Like, you see Conor Loftus, what he can do.
Yeah.
Came on against Kerry, got 2 points for us. Like, he's a really exceptional player. Like, you look around our team, you have our free taker Killian, you have Aidan, you know, you have Jason and Kevin who are runners. Like, you know, I'm fairly comfortable with that switch at that time. It is what it is, you know, really, to be honest with you. It's this guy, like Conor Loftus, it could be a special player, so I'm looking forward to seeing him playing a bit more. The Colm situation, I'd say, is probably the same. You have Stevie Cohen, you have a couple of guys coming on. You have to get legs on, you know.
And the thing about it is now, Andy, like, I can see Rob Jones, isn't it, the England rugby manager? He calls subs finishers now, so it's not a matter that you're a substitute, that you're chosen for the last 15 minutes rather than, you know, and you're a starter. Loftus is a finisher, and that's the reality.
No, I don't think so. And you see Kevin McMenamin there, like, you know.
Yeah,
Kevin, great footballer, like absolute great footballer. He's done his best work for that Dublin team coming on off the bench, like right back to, was it 2011 when he scored the goal, like, you know, so like he an exceptional player, like, you know. And I think, you know, every team kind of has them. Barry John Kane for Kerry, really good player, no matter how many points he, you know, he seems to be the man coming on. So every team has them. You know, I remember last year when the boys took off Ganey against against Dublin, there was the same sort of reflection, but it was probably just the same situation really, you know.
Talk to us about how your game has evolved this year, because my take on it is that you've played full forward and you would have played it similar to the way I played it, as in you'd make breaks, you're so desperate for the ball, you'd make breaks to the corner flags, to the out to midfield, you just wanted to be on it. Now you're a sharpshooter where you're only making runs where you might be getting it and being able to turn and score. So there has been an obvious, to me, evolution in the way you play this year. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I think, I suppose my scores kind of reflect that, if I'm being honest. Like, the role I was, like, you can only play the role you're asked to play, really, do you know? And Stephen doesn't want me out there, do you know? Do I get frustrated sometimes not being on the ball? Because you'd be a natural halfback, really, wing forward as well. So I just started off playing halfback, so I like being on the ball as well. But that's the way they want me to play it. Before, with James, with James Horn, when I played in there, it was literally getting ball position high up the pitch, so I had to win it wherever I could win
initial
it
ball,
and then just get it out, you know. So I suppose my scores for the year then would have been 14 to 16 points, and it's probably gone up a bit this year because of being in around the mixer. But again, it's been a bit smarter, being a bit quicker. If you're really on your game and you can be confident enough to hold your run, you can do that as well.
That,
you know?
That's the thing, but the bloody patience of having to do the Gooches and the Bernard Brogans have that patience. That's probably something you had to work on most.
Big time,
because you don't make your break until it gets to the half forward line. It used to be when the minute the half back line or midfield have it, I'm gone. Now you have to wait for
But at that time you could trip a corner back and you could kick him and you can hit him. You can't do anything to him anymore, you know. But it's
well, you had a nice little trick on Charlie Cooper there, didn't you?
Don't be highlighting that. But it's a fascinating part of the game, because when you have a sweeper, if you're making that run, you're just running yourself out of the game, you know.
Yeah.
And if you have a sweeper in there, you have to, if you can stay in there and occupy the sweeper, you make it very difficult for him to do really anything. You know, so if you stay, you stay, you stay, it's frustrating for you, but eventually the ball will come. And I think I've always thought I'd get better kind of the older I got. I suppose the injuries probably held me up a tiny bit, but in terms of that patience, that's come from a bit of experience, I'd say, more so than anything.
Yeah, and but even the ball that's been given to you though, Andy, has been great. Like against Kerry, you were getting beautiful diagonal balls. Like Enright had no cornerback can kind of defend against the likes of, you know, the ball that you were getting.
No, the two boys did a great job for us. Particularly Jason Doherty all year. I thought he was exceptional.
McLaughlin gives nice ones too.
McLaughlin has been, you know, has been doing it for years, you know. But like particularly the two boys do an awful lot of work for the team, but they do an awful lot of the initial ball into us too, which is, you know, if you have the quality of them two boys giving the ball into you, I think it makes it very easy for you as well to stay in there.
Yeah, no, it does. And Kamara, have you done much work on your shooting? Because like, I mean, your scoring percentage would be gone up a lot, and that's scores on the turn. Whereas, you know, if you're like you said, when you used to run to the wing, you might loop around and get one running at the goals, which I always found easier. But you're scoring now with one sidestep and a turn without looking at the goals. So, like, I mean, that's another thing, maybe string to your bow. Like, I mean, has a lot of work gone into that?
I think what's kind of helped me in terms of me shooting is that I don't shoot as much. So every time I kind of shoot, I kind of have to think about it. So you know yourself, when the body gets older, the hardest thing to do is kind of shoot. Like, you'd be sore as hell afterwards. You can't kind of go out. So if I go out on the pitch now, I do maybe 20 shots before training, but I hold it to 20. Like, I won't do any more. So I'm trying to concentrate on every single shot, kind of religiously. Like before, when I was a young fella, I'd go to the pitch for 4 or 5 hours, you know, just kicking. But this is different now. I just kind of go out, do my 20 shots, and that's it, really.
Right, okay, so it's more quality rather than
quantity.
And has Barry Solan helped you? Because, like, I mean, again, because I'm really interested in how your role has evolved, and it's interesting that Stephen Rochford has specifically told you to stop making the runs and be patient. But now you want explosive, probably, pace, don't you? Does Barry do work which is specifically in that kind of, you just need kind of maybe 15 metre explosive runs rather than
you know Barry, don't you?
Yeah
so
Barry,
he's a laid back sort of character. He'd been one of my best mates from home, and he came involved with us in the pre-season between 14 and 15. So on that time we met Aina Falvey, and my body was in bits at the time. The two of us sat down with Aina Falvey, and the two boys went down through a programme and just did it between the two boys. And from then, Barry's kind of been working at me, just trying to get my body right, trying to keep me, wrapping me in cotton wool at times, and just helping me. So in terms of all my weights and the way my body is at the minute, it's probably a lot of it is down to him, you know?
Right. So, like, I mean, you're committed for next year, and that's, like, I mean, will Barry take a pull on you some nights and say, look, don't want you doing that, you've had a tough game, you know, that you're you'll be 34 next year, right? Like, is there, are there specific training nights for E and then group nights?
Yeah, I do most of the field sessions where he kind of pulls it back a tiny bit, is the big weight sessions or the kicking sessions or something. I kind of run everything through him and say, I'm thinking about doing this, or I might have a weight session. He'd say, listen, do nothing on your legs tonight, do upper body. Where the boys might be doing all the kind of legs and weight sessions, he'd be just saying to me, just hold back there a tiny bit and don't mind yourself. But the field sessions, I do most of them. I get a little head start in the sprints because I'm a bit slower. But apart from that, he looks after me, do you know?
Right, okay. Who wins those sprints as a matter of interest? McLaughlin?
No, we have a few actually. David Drake, the brother-in-law, he's good at them. Paddy Durkin would be right up there. When Paddy Durkin puts his mind to it, and
really?
Lee Keegan puts his mind to it, they're the two boys that's to catch, you know?
That's interesting. Come here, before I finish up, so you're committed for next year, we know that. There hasn't been talk when you're all having a few beers together about anyone potentially wanting to leave it, because I know you've a lot of lads working in Dublin, and even though the age profile of the team isn't that high, there's a huge commitment in going back to Mayo for training and stuff. Has there been anyone, like, even entertaining the idea?
This has been a mad year. It's been that mad of a year. It's probably been the most enjoyable year ever. Do you know? That sort of way. You know yourself.
It always is with you, for God's sake.
But if you're playing games, you know, like, you want to be playing games, you know? And I think all the boys enjoyed it. I think the big two were probably, or the big three were probably myself, Alan Dillon and David Clark. And I can't see any reason for any of us to step away. And then I expect management and team to be all back the same as next year, and hopefully add a few young fellas to it, you know?
Okay, that'd be great, because just finally, we know you're a huge fans' favourite with Mayo, but what was that experience against Roscommon like, where you were booed right throughout the game? Like, I mean,
I was talking about it earlier. I didn't hear it at all. During the game. The whole stadium did not. My mother didn't.
A lot of the Roscommon, they actually kept it going. No, but they didn't mind your first goal.
I literally did not hear it for the whole game, but I heard it coming off. So it was a bit of crack. Like, honestly, our town is. Were you ever in Ballardrine?
No.
Well, it's a mad town. So basically, I'll tell you the way it works. Those flags up that morning, right, for the Roscommon Mayo game. Mayo win the game, and them Roscommon businesses took down the flags and put up the Mayo flag. So it's a mad sort of town, village. There's all villages around, French Park, Airog, Western Gate, you know, they're all around. So just, would I take too much out of it? No. It all came from a thing down in Kiltoom, a bit of crack, and I think it was probably blown out of proportion.
Right, it's like you were the pantomime villain. Like, I don't think there's any hatred.
Since 2003, I've been playing football for Mayo, and I've never been the pantomime villain. So there's probably a bit of sick enjoyment out of it too, do you know?
Yeah, it's funny, because I was talking to Pam Parsons, and he is actually in the very same situation as you, only on the Sligo side. Mayo have done well to kind of have the two of you, whereas Sligo and Roscommon can feel hard done.
But sure, my brother-in-law was playing too from Balladreen. Davey, he came on in both games, and he was very disappointed he didn't get any booing, you know? So it was a disappointing one, but it's... to be honest with you, I've met, like, Seanie McDermott and all them guys are, you know, they're all good friends of mine, to be honest with you. It's just, if the fact that Roscommon are now playing good football is actually unbelievably good for our town, like, in terms of young lads playing Gaelic, stuff like that. So if that helps in any way at all, I'm cool with it, to be honest.
And now you saying nice things like that, you might not get booed next year.
You never know.
Andy, thanks very much.
Thanks, Alan. Cheers, bud. Thanks, bud.
Andy Moran, what a great fella. Like, he just he's a great player, great pro, obviously tells you, a great trainer. I've seen him train myself in gyms in college, but like, he just sounds like such a leader as well. Like, I actually listened to that interview and think, that boy should be captain. Not to take away from Killian O'Connor, but you can just tell that he's a natural leader of men.
He just oozes enthusiasm, really, Andy. Yeah. And like, must have been hard for him to do. I think he said that it was hard for him to do it. You know, that's, you're talking 10 days out from the All-Ireland final. But to be honest, Andy saying that he was hanging around for another year, it really did give Mayo fans a massive boost for, you know, we're still a little probably down in the dumps after what happened against Dublin. But to hear Andy say that, it's like, right, you know, we go again. You know, and to be fair, that was very much the attitude that was kind of coming out of the homecoming, and anything you've heard out of the players since. So, but yeah, no better man to kind of get the gander up again for next year than Andy.
And like, I honestly thought it would have been absolutely crazy if he had decided to pack in a now after probably his best season in that position anyway.
Definitely, like, his best season,
Yeah, probably won Footballer of the Year. I think he should. Yeah, he probably should. Now, in fairness, I think the Dublin players are judged harshly on that, because they hammer teams, and it's not their fault. But
they're playing
so well. They're playing at that level, and all our teams aren't, so it's just harder to see. But anyway, Andy Moran should win it. But it would have been crazy after that year to say, I'm going to leave it now. Surely he should just have a... a bad year or a half decent year at least before you decide to think about packing it in. Like, he's nowhere near finished.
Yeah, I think Andy was probably more likely to pack it in maybe 2 years ago, year 2 years ago. He was coming off the back of some really bad injuries. And he wasn't even a guaranteed starter. That was the thing with Andy, even this year. It's an ageism thing in the GAA because he was 33, whatever. It was like, oh, we shouldn't be relying on Andy Moore to start these games, you know, even though he was still shooting lights out every time. And then it took to kind of latter stages, the Roscommon games, until we got to Croke Park to like, actually, yeah, we need Andy in there for as long as possible. So the narrative changed from we shouldn't be starting Andy Moore into, geez, why are they taking Andy Moore off so early? Do you know what I mean?
That's an interesting point. Like, you see this, we shouldn't be relying on him at 33. Like, we should focus on young kids and develop. You develop those young kids to get them where Andy Moore is now. So when they are 27 to 33, 34, 30, whatever it is, when they're playing their best football, that's why you're developing them in the first place. You don't just start writing them off then because of some abstract number beside their name.
Yeah, exactly. But no, Andy was absolutely outstanding. What he did differently from previous years, I think, is that he was a bit more efficient and economical in his movement, let's say. So while a couple of years ago you might have seen Andy racing 40 yards out to the corner flag to get a ball and then having to recycle it, this time he was getting it in the scoring zone. And he's not the fastest, but his movement is the best of any forward in the country, I'd say. And with that, he was able to manoeuvre himself into positions where he was a lot of the time shooting not particularly under that much pressure because of the quality of his movement. And I think his scoring returns were, they spoke for themselves. So fingers crossed it all tops off with the Footballer of the Year award.
But he's getting even smarter as well. There was one of those great highlights that we saw from behind the goals against Dublin, and he just comes out and checks Johnny Cooper puts him on his arse. But like, you know, just those little smart things, because there were two defenders. Philly McMahon was essentially a sweeper there, so he was cute enough to score it and just get rid of one of them however means necessary. Like, so he's sort of learning that role still as he goes along, because he hasn't started there, he hasn't played his whole career there.
Definitely not.
Like,
no.
So he's still almost improving. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, definitely. He kind of said it himself. Compared himself, like himself and Woolley would have been natural kind of wing backs, wing forwards when they were younger. So Andy really only became a full forward in the kind of later years. And even when you kind of move into the position first, I would imagine that like when you're so used to being out around the middle, you've a kind of natural inclination to wander towards the ball just to kind of get yourself involved, whatever. So it must have been difficult for Andy to kind of master that, to pick the right moments rather than try to get involved like all the time. But he's absolutely done it, and as Willie pointed out as well, been helped by the quality of service to him. If there's one thing that I think has improved massively about Mayo this year, it's the quality of ball going in from the likes of Kevin McLaughlin, and as Andy himself pointed out, Jason Doherty, who had a massive year.
But he's such an example, sounds like a cliche, but an example to young people, because on Sports Joe Live last night, he featured on that as well, and they asked him who is the slowest player on the Mayo panel. Now, maybe he was being humble or whatever, but he said himself, like, you know, and he obviously doesn't think he has any speed at all. And, like, you know, that's very interesting, because it's not about the speed. When you're in control of the run, you can decide when to go, where to go. Obviously, if it's a foot race, then that comes in very handy if you're fast and sharp. But when you are deciding when to go, then the defender can't really do anything about it but react.
But the thing would be, like, if you're a cornerback marking a guy who isn't deemed to have that much pace, the ideal way you'd think to mark him would be to mark him out in front.
Yeah.
But if you ever watch Andy from when he's standing behind somebody who's trying to mark him in front, he just is nonstop. He must be an absolute nightmare to mark. He's making runs, checking, making runs the opposite direction. His hands are pointing all over the shop. And because of that, then defenders get kind of spooked, like, okay, well, although I would beat him in a foot race, it's never likely to be a 30-yard foot race between me, you know, between himself and Andy. So then they kind of get a bit more conservative and start marking him from behind again. But as you said, as an example to any forward, is like, movement is an absolute joy to watch.
Do you know who deserves credit for putting him into full forward?
You.
Close. Mickey Moore. Put him there, him and Mark Lynch, him and Mark Lynch at Jordanstown won the Sigerson Cup 2008.
Okay.
And the two of those two man full forward line wreaked absolute havoc. Just get the ball into them, their movement was great, they're strong, they won their own ball. It's a joy to watch.
Yeah, because he had another great year 2011, and then I think 2012 he was flying it, then he broke his leg in the quarterfinals. So, yeah, it was obviously what he'd gleaned from Mickey Moran up there that kind of helped him out.
We'll be back in the final again next year, see how it goes. Coming up next, we're going to look ahead at the club fixtures, and we have a chat with Stephen McDonald.
Dearie, great to finally get to interview you.
Really, yeah.
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just patching the side either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask, you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
AIB, backing club and county.
Okay, we've got the GAA's very own Stephen McDonald on the line right now. He is part of the management team in Down with St Mary's Burn, and they are playing in the championship final on Sunday at 3 p.m. The game is on TG Cahir. Stevie, how are you?
Not too bad, Tom. How are you?
Not bad. Are you nervous?
Less than the lead up to any big game. You have nerves and you'll be thinking about lots of different things, particularly when you're on the sideline, but at the end of the day, that's only natural, and it's something that I've always found to be of benefit to any player, you know, that you feel a tingle of nerves in the build-up to any big game.
And what's the story now? I know, obviously, Burn, big reputation, big history, big proud club, but is there pressure or no pressure going into this game, considering where Kilcoo are coming from, winning 5 in a row?
Listen, there's always going to be a level of pressure in Burn because of their tradition and history. You know, a lot of these players, their parents have played in very successful Burn teams and have plenty of medals to count for. And you know, their sons want to replicate what their parents done as well. And that in itself brings a level of pressure. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, something that we've encouraged all year long from the sideline is that players, you know, go out with total freedom and play football, and they are allowed to express themselves. And sometimes if you allow players that type of freedom, you know, you probably get more out of them in terms of their on-pitch performance.
I was just going to ask you what sort of a manager would you be, especially coming to a final, so you would definitely encourage them just to express themselves.
Yeah, well, I'm not just the manager. Paddy O'Rourke's along the sideline as well, you know what I mean? So Paddy O'Rourke's the main man there. He's a Burn man. But listen, I'd be very much of the opinion that every player is different, of course, and you have to manage every player differently. But, you know, the first message that I get across to any player that walks under me is that that they do play with freedom, and that they don't play with any restrictions. That first and foremost, you've got to play football and enjoy playing football. And sometimes teams are very restricted in what they do, and players are restricted in what they do, and you don't seem to get the best out of them, and they don't seem to be allowed to express themselves sometimes. So we just give players total freedom and abandonment, and allow them to go out and play football with a smile on their face. And I feel that in the couple of years that I have been involved in coaching and management, that, you know, it has benefited certain players. Now, there is other players, of course, that you almost have to put a gun to their head and get them mad and psyched up for a performance, and that's how to get the best out of them. But it's about judging the type of players that you're dealing with, and each person has their own character, and it's about trying to get the best out of them in that way.
Well, what will you be like? Like, will you be more nervous for this game than you would be as a player?
Yeah, I think that's something that I have spoke about in the past. When you're a player, you know, I think using the phrase that you're very selfish is a selfish thing to say. But when you are a player, you know, you've got to deal and sort of like your own performance and your own preparation first and foremost. And after that, then hope and depend that your teammates are going to do the same. But, you know, when you're on the sideline, dealing with a group of 30 players, you're trying to get all 30 players, even though only 15 can start and 6 coming on, whatever, you're trying to get all 30 players in the right frame of mind. You're trying to week things, you know, you're thinking about what ifs, what if this happens, what if that happens. You're thinking about substitutions in advance of the game. You're trying to work on your time and get, you know, all the eating timing and schedules right for the players. So there's a hell of a lot more to think about and consider when you're on the sideline. And it's probably a lot more nerve-wracking, believe it or not, but listen, it's the challenges that we love to face. And if we didn't enjoy facing those type of challenges, we wouldn't be involved in working on coaching teams.
I thought you'd just be filling them all with ambrosia rice. It worked for you in your playing career.
That worked for me, but as I said earlier on there, you know, every player is different. There's certain players can go out and get steak and chips. I think Michael Jordan's pre-match meal was steak and chips. So if it worked for him, it can work for other players in Gaelic games. Steak and chips certainly wouldn't have worked for me. Ambrosia rice was the ticket for me, and I got my performance just right with that. But, you know, that would be more to do with the tingling sensation that I had in my stomach, the nerves maybe, that I couldn't get anything else down me.
And what about this Kilku side? Have you seen them much this year? Like, obviously their names sort of stand out themselves. You've Brannigans and Johnsons and Laverty there. Like, you know, have you got to get a good look at them?
Listen, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've been fortunate enough to have a good look at Kilku, and I've been a good admirer of Kilku football over the last 3 or 4 years. I think they're very, very unlucky that they haven't won Ulster title. I suppose doing media work on the sideline with BBC Radio, you know, you get to commentate and analyse a lot of the performances. And Kilku, for me, are in the top three teams in Ulster. And, you know, they have been extremely unlucky that they haven't kicked on and won an Ulster title. And that, there is no doubt about it, that is one of their driving ambitions, that they want to kick on and win, as well as winning county titles, but win Ulster titles as well. And they have some serious talent and fantastically gifted players amongst their team. You named a couple there, Ren and Joan Johnson, you know, two key players in the downfold as well, and massive players for Kilku. Darrell Hanlon is a fantastically gifted defender who can get up the field and score, and you know, he's tasked with kicking the freeze, and it just shows his ability in front of goals as well. And he'll more than likely, if there was a penalty in the game, he'd probably come up and strike it as well. But he's a great player, a player who won an Ulster All-Star this year. So, you know, they've got tremendous talent throughout the squad, but they've got, you know, great experience as well. You look at Phil McGreevy, who plays midfield for them, and he's been around, you know, 13, 14 years playing at senior level for them. And, you know, he does a lot of the untold and unseen work a lot of the times, but he's a fantastic player. Conor Laverty as well, you know, we all know the talent that he is, and you know, having had experience of many years playing inter-county football, he brings that invaluable experience to the Kilku cause, and he's certainly one of their leaders as well, and driving forces in terms of what they've done and achieved over the last 5 years. So listen, we're going into the Lions Den in terms of facing one of the best sides in not only down football, it is the best side in down football over the last 5 years, but one of the best sides in Ulster football, and it's not Ireland. So you know, it's going to be a hell of a battle for us if we're going to go out on top, and it's a battle that we will cherish and look forward to. But you know, make no mistake about it, you know, we have to be on top of our game for Bourne to come out on top of this one.
It sounds like you're being a bit of a cute her as well, though.
Yeah, you can say that, but listen, medals and facts are there for all to see, you know, because Kilku have been the dominant team in down. You know, it's like ourselves when we were coming up against Cross McGlenn and Drummond T, when they had a great team, you know, they kept hitting the wall when they came up against Cross McGlenn as well, you know. Once you've got that success of winning titles, you know, it instills a belief and a confidence in the team that is hard to overcome. And you can say that I am being a cute or whatever, but that's not the case. I have huge admiration for Kilku and what they bring to it. And they've got fantastically gifted players. They've got players who will do their utmost and everything that they possibly can to benefit their team in terms of getting results. And they've got warriors in their team, and that's exactly what you want. And, you know, they were beat in the Ulster club final last year. So, you know, you don't get to that level of success without being a fantastic team. Mm. They've got a tremendous management team as well. They've got Paul McGeever managing the team, and he was touted as becoming the next Derry manager when the job was up for grabs. So obviously he knows what he's about. You know, he's got a good background team on the sideline with him that will be good motivators in the Cuckoo setup as well. So, but listen, I'm confident that we in Burn have the exact same. You know, Paddy O'Rourke has been there, done it all as a player. You know, he's managed down to All Ireland success, captained down to All Ireland success. He's won a lot in his playing career. You know, he won All Ireland titles with Burn as a player. So, you know, he's the guy at the top of the pile for us, and he's a great motivator as well. So, you know, while Cuckoo have good motivators on the sideline, we certainly believe that we have them as well. And, you know, it is, you know, the final that, you know, everyone probably wanted to see. It is the two best teams in town. You know, I know before the semi-final we played Castle Wellan, and I said that they were the best footballing team in Down. I still stand by what I said. They are sitting 5 points ahead of anybody else in the league. Mm. And in terms of playing an attacking brand of football, they're probably the most exciting team I've seen this year. But, you know, Cuckoo and Burn are certainly the two most consistent teams in terms of getting themselves into a position to win honours in Down football. And, you know, this weekend's final, you know, it is top billed in terms of county finals around the country, and if both teams can live up to the expectation and go out and put on performances, then, you know, we're going to see something special.
Just finally, Stevie, what are you doing with Kevin McKernan? Because obviously he's played sweeper this year, he's played centre back, he's played midfield, he's been half forward. What are you boys doing with him? You're not going to tell me, are you?
We're never going to give that away. You know, Kevin's a fantastically gifted footballer. We're talking about a player who's played maybe 8 or 9 seasons at inter-county level and has been probably one of the most instrumental players in Ulster county football over the last number of years as well. This is a player who's represented Ulster provincial level. He's a player who's represented Ireland at international rules level and has performed in all of those games. So, you know, Kevin's a versatile player, as we all know. You can play him in corner back and you can throw him at the corner forward, and you'll always get a good shift out of him wherever he goes. But, you know, the secret to getting the best out of Kevin is, you know, letting him express himself as a footballer as well, and that's quite simple. But in terms of what we're going to do with him, I won't be saying anything publicly on any media outlet this week. But, you know, we would hope that Kevin will turn up on Sunday, as well as the team, you know, in the right frame of mind, ready to go into a dogfight, because at some stages on Sunday that's what it'll be. Will be an open game of football at some stages as well, and just be ready and prepared for what it takes to win a county final, and that's it.
I can see a time down the line in a few years' time, Stevie, when you're managing Armagh and Willie has fallen out with you and he's raging war against you because you're not giving anything away and you won't even talk to him, and he's going to say, what is the point of all this?
Well, I'll put it on record now that if I'm ever the Armagh manager, I'll talk to Wally then.
That's brilliant. Here's, thanks very much, Stevie. All the best on Sunday.
No problem. Thank you. Take care.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge the other night, and that helps the journey, to be honest, if I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs. Depends on mood, man. Ed's good for if you're in a sloppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Yeah, Stevie, giving nothing away there. You know, you think you know a man. You think you've built up a relationship. You think he's an analyst of the game, and then gets into a hot seat or part of the management hot seat, and he doesn't want to say anything.
Typical Northern football approach to this sort of thing.
Actually, respect him a lot more now. Because that game, Burnin against Kilcoo, is on TG Cahir, 3 p.m. I mean, I know a lot of these players playing in that match will have played in front of TV cameras and been exposed to a national audience before, but I can't really imagine what it'd be like as a club player. Like, surely it would have some sort of impact. Like, you know, knowing that there's going to be TV cameras and the whole country will be watching.
Definitely. Like, you know, to draw on kind of stereotypes, you'd imagine that any kind of shaper within the team would make sure to curl over their ridiculous point within the first minute, you know, that kind of way. But no, like, because especially with Ayr coming on now and TG Carr, these things get kind of built up as well. So, you know, you have to be kind of, you know, some players will shine, but you'd imagine that the glare of the spotlight might put a couple of players off, and that kind of only adds to it, really.
Yeah, and we're back. We've got loads of club fixtures again this weekend, and loads of hurling finals. Actually, there's a hurling final senior championship in Meath, Kiltale against Kildockey. I'm not actually going to try and name all these clubs because that's going to be disastrous. At the 4:30 on Saturday. The rest of them are on Sunday. The Fermanagh football final, now I know that, Derrygonley against Devonish at Brister Park at 4 p.m. and then we've got hurling finals in Kildare, Longford, Roscommon, Westmeath. So plenty of action to be got there. Don't be shy, get out to your games and support your local club. But that's all we have time for today. We'll be back next Thursday. See you then. All the best.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.